Okay, I think we'll get started. I know this place is huge and people tend to roll in a little bit late, but I'm going to welcome you to our session called Creating and Measuring Population Level Impact of Place-Based Behavioral Health Strategies, Lessons Learned from the Philadelphia Mental Health First Aid Program. I would like to introduce our moderator. Dr. Arthur Evans is a policymaker, clinical and community psychologist, and healthcare innovator. He's also the commissioner of Philadelphia's Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability Services. The transformation of the Philadelphia service system has improved outcomes for people accessing services and has resulted in fewer inpatient admissions, visits to crisis centers, and millions of dollars in savings that the city has reinvested in other community-based services. His work as commissioner continues his lifelong commitment to serving people who are underserved and ensuring that effective, high-quality health care is accessible to all. Dr. Evans has been nationally recognized for his work in behavioral healthcare policy and the transformation of service delivery systems. In 2015, he was recognized by the White House as an advocate for action by the Office of National Drug Control Policy. In 2013, he received the American Medical Association's Top Government Service Award in Healthcare, the Dr. Nathan Davis Award for Outstanding Government Services. Dr. Evans is also regarded as a strong advocate and was recognized by Faces and Voices of Recovery with the Lisa Mojer Torres Award. Dr. Evans holds a faculty position at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine and has held a faculty appointment at the Yale University School of Medicine. So you can see why we invited him here today. Just a word about the program before we get started is that we had four panelists for today. Our second panelist, Dr. Samantha Matlin, is, as we speak, perhaps having her child. Dr. Evans will be presenting on behalf of himself and Dr. Matlin.
Hello, everyone. Hello, everyone. I know you're out there. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Good. So, as was said, I am Arthur Evans, and I'm standing in for Samantha Matlin. And so, hopefully, sometime this week, we'll have another little one. But in the interim, I'm going to do our presentation. So, we have nothing to disclose. And I want to start, how many of you are behavioral health, in the behavioral health field, work in the behavioral health field? About half, okay. So I'm going to start with giving you an overview of why we've moved to a public health framework for how we think about behavioral health and talk about how that work has led us to implement strategies such as mental health first aid and give context so that when you hear the presentation about mental health first aid, you'll have a context for how that work got started. So in order to understand the significance of moving to a public health frame for behavioral health care, you have to know where the field is currently. And I would suggest that the field currently has a black box paradigm for what we do. And the way the black box works is this. People get sick, they go to treatment, we fix them, and then we discharge them. So those of you in behavioral health, isn't that pretty much the paradigm? You have to say yes. Okay, thank you. Okay. It's an interactive presentation. That's basically the paradigm that we have for healthcare in general, but behavioral healthcare in particular. This paradigm is very problematic for lots of reasons. So first, let me say that this paradigm has worked for lots of people, so this is not to say that our systems don't work. But if you think about behavioral health conditions, there are a lot of challenges with this way of thinking about mental health service delivery and behavioral health service delivery. What do you see that's problematic about this mental model for the delivery of behavioral health care services?
Not always an obvious cure or thing.
Okay, so there's not always the right treatment in the black box that is always going to lead to certain outcomes. What else? Okay, so sometimes people don't have access to treatment. What else?
Okay.
Okay. That's a very good point. So this is a very passive model. It requires that people recognize that they have a problem, understand what that problem is, know where to go to get help for that problem, and hopefully get to the right place. And we know from the research that that's not true, that half of the people who have mental health conditions, 90% of the people have substance use problems, don't go to treatment. Okay, give me a couple of others, and then I'll finish the critique. Yes. Okay, very good. Another very good point. So a lot of people, even if they recognize that they have a problem, they won't go. Right? Yes. I'm sorry? So it doesn't take into account that when people leave, they're not completely cured, right? And so the way our healthcare system is designed is that once the symptoms are abated, we stop paying for services, and there's an assumption that there's not a need for continuing support. All very good points. So let me give you a couple of other problems with this paradigm. So people recognize that often people don't recognize when, how, or if they do know those things in terms of how to access services, often they don't go because of stigma associated with treatment. There are a lot of issues related to what happens within the black box. One of the things to note is that because it's a black box, it is very scary to the public. Right? And people are often very reticent about coming to those of us who provide treatment for help. And the focus is always on what happens in the box. So if you look at people like myself who are public payers, we spend most of our time thinking about what's happening within treatment. When the reality is that what we've tried to do is to shift the focus from treatment to putting the focus on the individual or putting the individual in the center of our thinking. And so in this paradigm, what we're trying to do is to recognize that treatment is one of many things that can help people to get well, that the focus is on the person, and the focus is on not just reducing symptoms, but how do we help the person to recover from mental illness, recover from their addiction. For children, it's how do we help children be resilient? And that requires us to understand the context in which people live. So in the black box, you can take the black box and you can put the same black box in Alaska, urban Philadelphia, Missouri, doesn't matter. And the way people address treatment is the same in all of those contexts. But what we know is that if what we're trying to do is to help people to get better and to stay better, that we have to understand the context in which they live, and we have to prepare people for that context. The way we think about drug treatment, for example, for someone who lives in North Philadelphia might be a little different than how we might think about drug treatment for a person who lives in a very wealthy suburb where they are not dealing with some of the challenges of living in a urban setting. And so the last thing I'll say before I move on is that the transformation that we've tried to do in our service system is to move away again from this black box way of thinking to thinking about people in context and looking at not only what do we do to help people within the context of treatment, but then what do we do to ensure that the communities that people live in are going to be supportive, that there will be stigma associated with seeking out help, and that we want to make sure that all of those other things like their faith community, their family, all of those other social supports have the capacity to better address behavioral health conditions. So basically what we've done is to try to move to a population health way of thinking. And for that, what we mean is that we're focused on not only those who are seeking help, but we're also thinking about people who are not seeking help. Because as I mentioned, if part of our challenge is that people are leaving treatment not completely well, we want people in those communities to have the capacity to support people. So if we help a person who has very serious mental illness, to get to a better place. They go into a community where they are discriminated against, it can actually undermine the things that we do in treatment. And so it's really important to think about the entire community when we think about addressing behavioral health conditions. So in our view, a population health management approach does a few things. One is that it recognizes that there are social determinants. There are things in our society that lead to and affect people's health, and it's not just treating the individual. Secondly, in our view, a health, population health management view is focused on long-term outcomes, not just symptom reduction, but how do we help the person to be successful long-term. Thirdly, health is the goal, not just the absence of symptoms. It requires partnerships because we can't do it just as providers or even systems administrators. We have to think about communities. Requires creativity, innovation, absolutely needs data to help drive strategies. Strategies have to be systemic in nature, and we can use managed care approaches, which is something that is important for us. So the basic idea is this, is that what we've tried to do is move from just looking at effective treatment, but recognizing that we need effective treatment plus community strategies. So what I'm going to talk about is give you some examples of what that looks like. And just say up front that even though I'm going to talk mostly about the community or public health strategies, I want to emphasize that that's in relationship to strengthening treatment as well. And so, these are just examples. So, one of the things that we've done is to create an evidence-based practice and innovation center to systematically infuse evidence-based practices into our system. The people there are creators of EBPs that we've worked with to do that work. And so, to give you a sense, Philadelphia has about 1.5 million people. We have managed care responsibility for about a third of the population. The other two-thirds of the population get their care through the public, through private insurance. We have about 200 providers that range from large hospital systems to community mental health centers to residential treatment programs for both adults, children, substance use, and mental health. And over the last 7 years, we've tried to implement EBPs across the entire range of services, and this just gives you a sense of the sort of the scope. Over 500 therapists, 60 programs to date that we've infused EBPs in. We're also using pay for performance, using financial incentives to try to improve treatment. If you are interested in sort of the transformation, there are practice guidelines that we've developed that you can download. And so my only point in sharing that is that in our view of a public health approach, it is both how do we improve treatment so that it is maximally effective, but we also have to do these public health strategies. I'm going to give you a few examples of those. First, a little background. In behavioral health care, about 25% of the population has diagnosable mental health condition. So that means for people like me who are public payers, the resources that I have a $1.2 billion budget, most of that, almost 99% of that, will go to people who have a diagnosable mental health condition. The other 75% will not have, it's very hard to have any kind of intervention because of the nature of how we fund our healthcare system. People have to be sick in order to get healthcare services, right? And so the question for us is it true that the other 75% don't have any behavioral healthcare needs? Most of us in this room recognize that that's not true. And the reason that we think about prevention, universal strategies and other strategies for improving, addressing behavioral health conditions is that we recognize that the other 75% have needs as well. The other concept that's really important is that healthcare accounts for about 10 to 20% of health outcomes. The other drivers of healthcare are things like lifestyle, the environment, human biology. But if you look at what we do in terms of interventions, most of our interventions are within that healthcare slice of the pie. And so part of our thinking is, how do we get to the other 75% of the population, and how do we start to think about other ways of intervening outside of the healthcare system? Everyone with me so far? Okay, so here are a couple of examples of how we've done that. And some of the, I won't go through this just in the sake of time, but just to give you a sense of sort of the range of things. So we map lots of different things in Philadelphia. So when you're in an urban setting, one of the things that you will find is that things happen within certain geographic areas. This is just some disparity data. And just quickly, I'll tell you what those three maps show you. One of the things that we have in Philadelphia are disparities between African Americans, Asians, and whites in terms of penetration rates. And penetration rates are just the proportion of people that access treatment. So the first map shows that we mapped areas of service utilization for the African American population, and we noted that there were certain areas, geographic areas, where there were there was very low utilization. And if you looked at those areas of low utilization in the second map, those are the areas where we had high concentrations of African Americans. And then the third map shows where we actually have treatment programs within the city. And so part of the disparity in terms of access in our system is related to the distribution of where we actually have services. If you kind of think about how we think about addressing disparities, we often think about making programmatic changes to make services more acceptable to people who show up at the door. What our data was showing by geo-mapping was that part of the problem was the door wasn't in the right community. So we did a couple of things. One is we did RFPs to put services in those areas. And then secondly, we did some work, we've done some work in terms of targeting those areas to change public perception and understanding of behavioral health conditions. We also do, we've also tried to do more activities that you might see in traditional public health departments. So one of the things we do in healthcare is screening. It's not something that we do in behavioral healthcare a lot. And so what we've tried to do is to implement behavioral health care screening in lots of different ways. And so one of the ways we've done that is through an online, this is a website that we have, where you can go on, take a screening for, takes about 10 minutes, we screen for PTSD, depression, so forth. And so if you think about what we talked about earlier, that lots of people are never gonna go to a treatment program, but lots of people will actually go to a website, take a screening, and based on that, actually, it will give them feedback around particular services. We've taken that idea, put it into a kiosk. This is, you know, when you go to the drugstore and there's the blood pressure kiosk. Well, this mental health screening kiosk is actually at a retail pharmacy, retail health clinic. And the whole idea is that people, in the context, it's actually in a ShopRite, can do online screening within that context. And what we found is that, you know, our original thought was that people wouldn't do this publicly, but it turns out people will do this. And in fact, Drexel University just added one to their student center, and it's getting a lot of activity, and lots of young people who are having mental health challenges are getting connected to services. So it's, again, a way of sort of getting out of the black box that we talked about and thinking about how do we help identify people earlier. Another thing that we do is we go into communities after shootings, because one of the challenges you have in urban settings is that you often have lots of violence. Children will often see the violence, are affected by that, or traumatized by that. And typically what happens is we wait until people need treatment for post-traumatic stress. And so what we're trying to do is get further upstream and to say to people, what are normal trauma responses, as a way of getting to people earlier and helpfully having people come into treatment earlier. We also work very differently with some of our immigrant communities, because some of the immigrant communities that we work with don't even have a word for mental health. And so if we are expecting that people who may be coming from countries where there is a lot of trauma are going to walk into a treatment program, not going to happen. And so in those communities, we form community coalitions where we ask a mental health provider and an indigenous community provider, other healthcare providers, general healthcare providers to come together and partner. And as a result of that, we have people who are accessing help who would otherwise not access help. Again, sort of thinking out of the box in terms of how we reach populations. These are just pictures from the Burmese and Bhutanese communities, which is a growing population in Philadelphia, as an example. We know that health activation is an important strategy. How do we get and change public perception? We've seen that with breast cancer, so you see literally thousands of people who walk and do all kinds of activities, and that's really changed public perception. And I think more people are getting screened earlier and so forth. And so what we've tried to do in Philadelphia is taking a hint from that is, how do we change public perception in a similar way? This is a recovery walk. This is actually the first recovery walk that happened in Philadelphia, sponsored by an advocacy group called PROACT. The first walk had about 150 people. This year we had 25,000 people. So it's really grown over the years, but it's, again, trying to change public perception, trying to reduce stigma around these issues, and activating communities to think about these issues differently. This is just an aerial shot. Last example I want to show you is some work we've been doing with the city's Mural Arts Program to, again, reduce stigma. So if you come to Philadelphia, one of the things that you will see are murals all over town. The murals are actually painted by community members. And so what the Mural Arts Program historically will do, go into a community, identify a group of people, an artist, the artist comes in, the community comes up with the idea, the artist basically comes up with the concept, the community approves the concept, and then the artist puts that image on these big swaths of parachute cloth. And what you see there are people actually painting by number. So the artist does it, paint by number, community comes in, paints the mural. So a few years ago we thought, what if we started to use these projects or do projects that were based on behavioral health issues, recovery, trauma, suicide? And so we actually started doing that. And it's just some of the examples like this one. This is in Southwest Philadelphia with an immigrant African community, which lots of trauma in that community allowed us to establish relationships in that community that continue to this day. This is our suicide mural, which had over 1,000 people working on it. And you know, most of those people are people who would never come to a lecture on mental health or suicide, right? But they, in fact, if you can see some of the portraits there, they came to honor people who had died by suicide. Actually, a lot of firefighters participated in this because the firefighters had a number of people who died by suicide in the year prior to us doing this. And so we're trying to reach people that we would not ordinarily reach. Again, this is a mural in Philadelphia, had 1,000 people to work on it. And if you look at that picture, you cannot distinguish who are the clients of that program versus community members, right? And so one of the ways we know that we reduce social stigma is by social contact. This is the way it looks now. It's 1,000 people worked on that. And it changed the dynamic between that program and the community, such that the community and the program works on a community garden. And prior to this work, there have been these tensions between the community and the program. So that gives you just a sense of the range, and these were just examples to give you a sense of how we started to think differently about behavioral health conditions and behavioral health issues, trying to get beyond the black box. Mental health first aid is another very important strategy, but my colleagues are going to talk about that, and I'm going to introduce them